in the Chassidut Kiddushin, which of course can be discussed at much greater length than time allows, but just a few highlights, and of course I open with a request for any questions you may have. This is the shiur for those who are in the middle of their finals and taking time out for shiurei Torah. You certainly deserve the right to ask questions so we can tailor the shiur to your desires. Okay? Who's married in the room? Okay, so we have, thank God, one person who will be able to say if I'm saying it's true or not. Who's ever been at a wedding, raise your hand? Okay, so you've all been at weddings, you've seen weddings, so most things I'm going to describe are because you've seen already, but maybe you didn't pay careful attention because you weren't clued in. Okay, I'll ask you a question. So you come to a wedding, what's the first thing that happens? Shmork, I was waiting for that. Okay, but the people who want to see what goes on halachically will go leave the shmork, which is usually where the lady sits, the kala, and will go to where the chosen sits. So what's the first thing that happens in the chosen's room? Tanoim. Does everyone know what the word tanoim means, literally? What does it mean?
Conditions.
The word tanoim means conditions. Traditionally, I'm speaking now for Kilot Ashkenaz. I'm not sure it's Edot HaMizrach. I have no idea what they do. But in the Kilot Ashkenaz, they had tanoim. In Europe, they had two tanoim. They had a tanoim rishonim, the time of the engagement, in which they committed to marry each other. And traditionally, if you backed out from that agreement to marry, you, number one, accepted upon yourself a cherim. Yeah. A lot of cold feet, you know. People always back out from things. Cold feet. But no one wants a cherim either. And aside from the cherim, which, you know, people who have Yiras Shamayim are worried about, there's also a knas, a financial penalty accepted upon yourself. And in the traditional kanoim, it said that neither will absolve the other. Hacherim liyftur as taknas, taknas liyftur as hacherim. So you're in big trouble. There's someone as far as to say that if you wanted to break off an engagement after a time, the best thing to do is to get married and divorced, which is such a hard thing for us to even contemplate. Making a woman a divorcee just like this, just not, but if the alternative is a hacherim and or a knas, you can understand where that's coming from. So, in most places that I've been in, that's no longer done. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal redid the text of the Tanoim, and I brought a copy with me just to read to you. It says basically nothing. Nothing really. It just says that they're going to get married to each other. That's, I guess at that point in time, I've never been at a wedding where they backed out after that point in time. Well, it says that the chosen is going to. The ones who are accepting the responsibility, if you will, are the father of the chosen and the father of the kala. What do they agree? Everything's been taken care of already. Only one thing is left. They're going to get married on this day. Okay, they're not going to hide from each other. They'll share their property together. Kederech b'nei Torah yir Hashem. And that's it. Sorry. It's a photo op, basically. It creates a potential for three more kibbutzim. Two witnesses and someone to read it tonight. And if the rav comes late, it can be four more kibbutzim. Someone who arranges it tonight. The Besad Mishnah doesn't come so early. So that's great. For that, it's great. Okay. I brought a copy of the more traditional tonight, which is still used in certain parts of the world. And there it says that each party is going to take care of their clothes, their child, give gifts. And then it says, Ayin Kuf Mitzad HaChosen is this one, and Ayin Kuf Mitzad HaKal is this one. Anyone know what Ayin Kuf stands for? Good guess. What does it really stand for?
170 talents? Some number?
No, it's not a number at all. Ayin Kuf stands for Orev Kablon. An Orev Kablon means someone who accepts responsibility in case either of the sides will not fulfill their respective obligations, and it could be financial obligations. Well, then this party accepts to make good to the other side the amount of financial loss. But he says, well, they can't lose it forever. It means that the parties, namely the father of the chasson and the kala, are obligate themselves to pay back the guarantors should there be some kind of a loss. Now, of course, because they don't want to have the more rigorous and frightening parts, even these tanaim, which are printed now in used in certain circles, leave out both the cherem and the knas. It's not there. The two most important parts of the tanaim are both omitted from this typical situation. But there are cases where they use a pattern of a different text, where there actually is at least a knas, if not a cherem. I remember a story many years ago in the early 70s when someone from my yeshiva was engaged to a wealthy young lady, and it was a tanoim, and they wrote a certain amount of money. If I'm not mistaken, then it was $100,000 as a knas if either party backs out and the girl backed out. And the father of the girl wrote a $100,000 check to this jilted and depressed chosson, but you know, helped make the medicine go down. The 100,000 spoonfuls of sugar. Okay, so that's what happened. Then it says, "Umachmas ktat v'idur chas v'sholom yisnagel ketakonos shin vav mem." What does that stand for? Yeah, what does that mean? Correct, you got it right. Shum stands for Spira v'Maisa Magensa, the famous Kilos Shum of Germany, medieval times. But what does it mean, ktat v'idur? Most people have no idea what in the world this means. So I'll tell you. Idur means, anyone go to some Hebrew speaking high school or grade school where they spoke, you know, if you're absent, what do they call you? They call you Ne'edar. If you came late, you're Mu'uchar. If you're absent, you were Ne'edar. Ish lo Ne'edar. It comes from the Pasuk. You say it in the Haftorah. Here it means you're dead. You're dead, you're absent. It's a long term absence. No one writes around on dead, so they're either if someone dies, this is Takana Shum, which is the more famous of the two, that there was a problem, a person would promise a large dowry for a daughter. If the daughter died within a year, so the poor guy, Vitam Larik Kochachem, someone whose daughter dies, he gave away all his money to the dowry, and now his daughter died, so the son-in-law keeps all the money and goes marry somebody else, and he's left no money, no daughter. It's in the Tochacha. V'tam l'rik Tochacha. Rabbeinu Tam, we always think Rabbeinu Tam was Yaakov Ish Tam Yosho, but some say it has to do with this. He was the first one to eliminate this possibility by saying the first year she dies without any children, all the money goes back to her father. Follow? If he dies, maybe the same thing, because otherwise it might go to his heirs. That's what's called Takana Shum. It could be the second year that half goes back. This started off in Shum. What's Ktat? Ktatvi, what's Ktat? What does the word Ktat mean?
Fighting.
What?
Fighting.
Fight, right. What does it mean to fight? You have to look it up in Nachlas Shiva, Sibin Tes. He has this in Tanoim Achronim. They had two Tanoim. The first one, they should back out. And the second one, at the time of the wedding, Ktat means, if you look carefully in the Nachlas Shiva, Sibin Tes, it says, if they fight to the point that they're no longer living in the same house, that the husband promises to give his wife 10 golden coins on the spot, and every month give her 10 golden coins until the Bezdin will be able to put them back together again. If you ask me, this is exactly a prenup. This is the prenup. This is exactly the prenup we have. It's a perfect precedent, in my opinion, for the prenup that we have. And therefore, those who are critical of prenups, because, you know, Chodesh Asim in the Torah, something new, it was written in the Nachla Shiva in the 17th century, and it goes back probably to the 12th century, if indeed it goes back to Takana Shum. Fine. This is a more complete Tanoim. Okay, so the first thing goes on is the Tanoim. Yes, sir.
In that first version of the Tanoim, which already said it's basically a photo op. So, don't they do like a Maisa Kinyan though?
Sure, the Kanina. Where the Kanina is in both of them, the Kanina.
Yeah, but what's Maisa Kinyan for?
That they should get married. Okay. And they shouldn't hide from each other. You know, there is one line here. Yishtazu b'nechseim shava b'shava. And if you look at Ulster Apostkim, some take it literally, which means in case Khalid of a divorce, they split the property 50-50. They were more avant-garde than California. California is the first state of community property. According to one version, it's already happening in Tanoim. Most people say it's just a platitude. That doesn't mean anything. So just letting you know, that's the one, only potentially meaningful statement in the Tanoim. Fine. So the Tanoim is the first thing. What happens after the Tanoim? No. When you go to a wedding, what else happens next?
Ksuba.
Ksuba. Okay. So Ksuba. One more time. Yeah. Thank you very much. They usually break a plate at the Tanoim. Very good. Very good. They used to break plates at the Tanoim Rishonim before the, I told you, months, as soon as they got engaged, which led to all kinds of problems if they broke it. Chayrim, etc. Who knows what. Anyway, so I have a Ksuba here too. Ksuba, the interesting part of a Ksuba, which is the Messiah Kiddushin has to do, is to fill out all the blanks. The best what we call a boilerplate. So the boilerplate is not so exciting, but the first few lines are all blanks. The day of the week, the day of the month, you know, the date of the month, the year, the place, the name of the chassan, and the name of the kallah. That's all the first one. In this edition, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. First six lines is more blanks than there are boilerplate, because everything else just has to be filled in. All right? Now, there are interesting questions about this, which we can't spend too much time, just a little bit. Dates can be complicated. For example, some months, it's Mar Cheshvan, not Cheshvan. It's Av, you know, I'm Menachem Av. These are controversial somewhat. What about the place? Where's the place? So, you have to find the name of the city, or the name of the location, which is more particular or less particular. It comes in complicated. And even the names can be complicated. Our tradition calls for the name of the Chosin, son of his father. Right, that's the Mishpachosin Levei Savosam. Speaking of the Mishpachosin, the text I have here comes from the Bezin of America, the Rabbinical Council of America, which has the family names in it. So this is this. Others leave out the family name. Any questions so far? So I'll tell you once. I can tell stories all day about these issues. But I'll tell you just one story from my wedding. This will be. If you remember one story, we'll get it. My wedding, Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal was a Masada Kedusha. I was a youngster, I didn't know anything. So my father, Zechron Lebrocha, had arranged for one of my cousins to write a ksuba on a klaf in Ksav Ashuri. I know nothing about it. Okay, so he had on top, in big letters, Birvi. You know, many ksubas, the illuminated ones, have the first word, you know, it was a Tuesday night, it was a Birvi, it was really Wednesday. Birvi, B'Shabbos, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The rabbi walks in, the other rabbi says, puzzle. Why is it puzzle? Yeah, Berevi, it's bigger than the rest of the letters. It's in the middle of a line. It's just not part of the text. Puzzle. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, that's how I was right next to him. He said, all the ksumas are like this, all the ksumas are like that. You know, it's gone hundreds of years like this. So the rabbi reads this line. He reads, Shnas, Chamesh, Alofim, and then it says, Vishesh Meos. Was off by 100 years. What happened was that my cousin copied from the Madrich, and the Madrich, I don't understand what this person was thinking. It was printed in the 1930s, okay, which 1930s was in the Jewish calendar, was the last decade of 5,690 something. He put down Sheish. To me, it's going to become obsolete in a few years. So he copied Sheish. The Rav smiles, I told you it was puzzled. He was so excited. Okay. So they pulled out. I don't know what to do. Luckily, my wife has two uncles who are acting rabbis, and they knew to bring a ksuba. The first thing, bring an extra ksuba. That's the first rule, always bring an extra. So they each one had an extra. This one, which is the Bezin of America, the rabbinical RCA ksuba, which the Rav had authored, of course, Rav was the chairman of the Halach Committee. My uncle brings in, no good. It's his ksuba. Why is it no good? You see on the top, can you read from where you are at the top, what's on the very top? What does it say? Pesiyat HaDeshmaya. The Rav said, What is this? A letter? It's a shtar. Put it away. When he was a zong suma. When he was my wife's other uncle, he wasn't a member of the he wasn't a Y U Musbach, he was a Chaim Berlin Musbach. He bought what we'll call a Moshe Suma. As I say, Baruch Hashem, it didn't say Baruch Hashem. Didn't say Mishad of the Shemaya. So the Rav Phil starts filling that one out from scratch, and he makes a real honest to goodness mistake in my name. But for real. So Nebuch, he had no choice but to use this one. Okay, but the Rav has a chumrah in which he, Rav Moshe, when he filled out tzumas, he says, watch him, he filled out like you do a check. So if there's a big line, you want to give $50, and the line is as big, so we're $50. The Rav said, you have to fill up the whole line. Yeah?
What was the issue of the
Betzah Mephtalah? What is this, a letter? It's a shtar.
Is it like halachically?
At the end, he used it. That moment came into his mind that it shouldn't. It's a financial document. It's not something of spiritual nature so much. He wanted to take out. There's a postscript. I'll tell you that postscript now. I was once at a wedding with Rav Goldberg, Rosh Yeshiva Kerem Yavne. He was a Masada Kedushin, and it was a talmid of mine. I was getting married, and I had told Rav Goldberg the story of my wedding. So it was a ksuba, and one of the Hasidic Rebbes in Farakaway was reading the ksuba. So he came over to us. We were sitting at the waiting for the chuppah to start. He says, "I'm sure they're talking Yiddish. Is it okay if I put down on top, you know, Baruch Bezus Hashem?" So Rav Goldberg looks at me and says, "Tell me, do you put Baruch Hashem whenever you write a check?" So the guy looks at him, Rebbe. What are you saying? A check is a ksuba. It's a holy document. The whole point of the Rebbe was that the Rebbe was not. It's just like a check. Anyway, the postscript. So he says, okay. So he wrote that. Bezos Hashem is Baruch. He wrote a whole thing on top. Anyway, back to this. So everything's fine and dandy because you can always extend things. You know, and most letters can be extended. Right? Many Hebrew letters can make it as wide as a bays can go like this. Right? A resh can go like this. A hey, a dalet. You know, you can just extend like in the Sefer Torah when you have to extend it. Please can't tell my last name. Vilig. Vav. Vav. Yud. Lamed, you know, I guess in theory you could have gone all the way back, but Lamed. Yud, and there's this much space left. Only one letter, Gimel left. So he makes a Gimel like this. So my cousin, who was a youngster at the time, says to his father, my uncle, Abba, that doesn't look like a gimel. I gave him an elbow. Luckily, Rav's hearing wasn't so good. So that's the ksuba that we have to this day. If nothing else, after this, she got a couple of stories from a chasana from a long time ago. I'll tell you one more story for that later. And the rest of the ksuba is more or less boilerplate. Although, it's important to understand, this is a ksuba for a first marriage. A psulta. First marriage, as you learn ksubas, you know it's a certain amount of money that's involved. If it's a second marriage, or the equivalent, it's less money, right? As a matter of fact, it's much less money, because although it's 200 for a first marriage and 100 for a second marriage, anybody hear the Kiddushin last year? So what am I driving at?
Kesef, it's not Kesef Tzuri.
That's right, Kesef Tzuri, Kesef Medina, 8-1 ratio. So it's really a 16-1 ratio. Because in the ksuba, we write the chaz of the chimi dorai, so every ksuba has that for a basula. And even if it's the rabbana and the rosh says in ksuba, so we write with dorai, so they give the higher amount of money. Whereas for almana or grusha, etc., you write down the rabbana. So it's really only 1/16. Yeah, but what's the whole, what's it worth? It's 50 shkalim, kesev yishka kamara basulas. How much is 50 shkalim in real dollars? Anybody know?
12.
50 shkalim is 12 dollars.
50?
5-0 shkolim. Who's ever been an opinion of Ben recently? Ever been an opinion of Ben? No one's ever been an opinion. Who's ever in his life been an opinion of Ben? Okay. So how much money do they give?
Chamesh
slime. That's 5 shkolim. So a ksuba is 10 times opinion of Ben. So no one has been an opinion of Ben recently. So you don't know how much money you give to a coin opinion of Ben. So it's just. Huh?
Four sisters.
What would you say?
Don't you just buy
five silver dollars. I don't know what a silver dollar is worth nowadays. Probably press a button on your computer and find out in a second. Go on Google. What's a silver dollar worth, huh? $18? Makes sense. It's going to be $90. Hey, that's a lot of money, $90. You're giving the Kohen twice as much as you need to. All you have to give him is about silver at the present rate. If you give him $45, it should be enough. And if again, the Ksuba is now worth approximately $450. It varies, ups and downs, the silver market. Okay? Good. Rav Moshe was asked how much the Ksuba is worth. He says it doesn't matter really nowadays because, number one, the purpose of the Ksuba originally was not the main purpose, he claims, is shouldn't have a impetuous divorce. Shlo tekala bein avlotziah. And the money is so small that no one's going to stop divorcing a wife for $450. You go to the gas station, they charge you that much to fix your car. So, you know, it's not going to accomplish what it's accomplished. But more than that, Rav Moshe writes, and the Ramah has this as well, that the whole point is don't divorce your wife on a whim. That was only true before Rabbeinu Gershom prohibited divorcing a wife against her will. So the Ramah suggests that maybe Ksuba is not so important nowadays. Now, you know, the Gemara tells us that a man's not allowed to live with his wife without a Ksuba. And the Ramah says, well, maybe today might be a little bit different because today you can't divorce your wife against her will. So therefore, maybe it's not so serious as it used to be. There's nonetheless the custom is we do have a Ksuba. If it gets lost, we have to replace the Ksuba. But the Ramah should be an additional factor in certain cases to be for some leniencies. Okay, so far so good. So that's the basic obligation of the Ksuba. But before he even gets to the Ksuba, he obligates himself to work, I'm just translating, to work, cherish, support his wife, according to the laws of Jewish husbands who do all these things. Okay? That's the first thing. So you have to understand that you have to work. Those who think otherwise, think again. The first line is about not to work. Now I'll tell you, I guess a little bit of a joke. I haven't had any jokes yet today. This is a joke of some sort. I have in front of me the ksuba that was vocalized on the nekudas by Professor Richard Steiner, taught for many years here in Revel. When his daughter got married, he wanted to make sure the ksuba was written properly. He came to me, he was a member of my shul originally, and he wanted to make certain other changes. I said to send to Rabbi Shechta. Rabbi Shechta Shalita made certain other changes. So there's a whole new ksuba, it's called Rabbi Shechta Ksuba, which has a number of changes which you can get. But the interesting, the first line of its changes, not changes, just dots, and I read that ksuba, because the chassam was a Talmud of mine, and married his daughter. Big Talmud Chacham now. Anyway, the first is Eflach. First, Eflach means to work. I will work. I said, obviously. No. This is the story that emerged afterwards. I was at a Shalom Zachar in my neighborhood in Riverdale, and the grandfather of the baby walked. It was sitting there, and a rabbi from the community walks in, and the following conversation ensues. Remember, there was once at a wedding, and the rabbi read it, not Eflach, but Afalach. You go to many yeshivish weddings, that's how they read it, Afalach, because they're not experts in Aramaic diktuk. So this professor said, it's not a mistake. Eflach means, I will work. Afalach means, I'll make you work. That's a little bit of a joke. I mean, the follow-up on the joke is, I just heard this on Shabbos, that someone came to a rabbi and said, Rabbi, we have to eliminate the Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom that prohibited bigamy. How can you support yourself in the salary of only one wife? Anyway, a little humor. Okay, fine. So after the...
That's why you're not allowed to marry two sisters, because you're going to marry two wives and get two fathers-in-law.
Okay, one joke leads to another. Fine. In any event, and then it says the husband, you know, has a ksuba, and then it says mezonaychi ksusichi lichpusichi melevasichi karachala, which is called shere ksusa vanasa lo yigra. This is the fundamental obligations of marriage. And then it says there's a certain amount of dowry that the husband acknowledges he received from the father-in-law. We talk about fathers-in-law, silver, gold, jewelry, clothing, furnishings, and bedding, six things. How much? Meir zekukim kesef tzaruf. Now, zekukim are not halachic coins. These are coins which existed in Europe. It's not at all clear the ratio of a zuz to a zakuk. There's an additional 100 zekukim that he accepts upon himself as a tosefes. Sacha kol masayim zekukim. So it's masayim zuzim and masayim zekukim. It's a debate whether it's in addition or the zuzim are subsumed under the zekukim, which is not, the only difference is $450. I'm not going to quibble about that. But what's the ratio of zekukim to zuzim? In other words, how many zuzim in a zakuk? What's the ratio? We don't know. It's 450 times how much? Varies dramatically. Some say it's as little as 4 to 1. So the whole ksuba with everything together put together is $1,800 added, $450 at best added to that. So it's $2,250 max. I don't know, that's maybe more than it costs to repair your car, but I'm not going to do that much to avoid a divorce. The Chazon Ish says it's maybe 50 or 60 times the $450. You're talking up now, maybe up to $27,000. That's already money. Interestingly, the original 200 zuz number. Does anybody know what the word 200 zuz is? Where it's found in Shas, Shnayas, Rishalmi? Anybody know?
Mar
absolus is the 50 shkol. That's correct. But where, in what, a different context, other than getting married? Anyone know where it is? Other than onus and mafata, yeah, that's all that comes from. Anyone know what else comes from?
Have a tenant? How much it takes to live on?
Correct. Talmud Chacham. Mishnah and Peah with the Rishalmi. It's enough to live on for a full year. Full year. When Rav Moshe wrote that it doesn't pay to discuss much how much the ksuba is worth, he included that typically it's what we call Mechilas HaKsuba. It's in the text of every Siddur get, she's Mechil HaKsuba. I once had a case where the woman said from the beginning, I'm not Mechil HaKsuba. So I had to figure out how much she had to get for the ksuba. So I was thinking, maybe we should, since I was empowered to pass in din and lefnei mishuras hadin, maybe we should give her a whole year's sustenance. How much is that? How much to live? None of you are going to know, except the married people in the room, have an idea. What it costs to live for a year. One person, a woman, rent. It's a one-bedroom apartment. Rent. Clothes. Which, if you've never paid women's clothing bills, you don't know what that means. And other basics, insurance, a car if it's appropriate, various. Give a guess.
$50,000.
$50,000, I think you're right. I think it's a very good guess. In certain neighborhoods it's more, certain neighborhoods it's less. Depends where you live, obviously. Right? So I wanted to maybe give her $50,000 for the ksuba. Well, the Rabbanim told me you can't do that. That's not what he meant. It wasn't meant that. You have to give the lowest of the lowest. But the 50,000 sum is relevant because of our prenup. So the prenup, you have to give money, right? So there used to be 10 zekukim. What's 10 zekukim nowadays? So nowadays, we have a prenup. I have a copy of it in front of me. We put $150 a day, which is $54,000 a year, which some say is too little, some say is too much. Obviously depends where you're coming from. So if the real halacha is you're obligated to support the wife to the higher of the two standards of living of the wife's family and the husband, whichever is higher, it's called ol imom and yoredes imom. If both would be less than $50,000, we would scale it down. As a matter of fact, we have a version for Israel, prenup, and I called a few people and they said, what is the cost to live a day in Eretz Yisrael, let's say around Mapa Chemish, where the Americans live? Instead of $150 a day, they told me $75 a day. So you put in $75 a day, and then we wrote explicitly, but it could be less if the higher of the student is less than that. What happens if the man can't afford it? So the man can't afford it, so we have a general rule, if you can't afford to pay back the money that you owe, misadrin lebal chov. You don't take away your shirt, and your chair, and your table, and your... So in this case, what's it then? So the answer presumably is, no. Here you have an option. The option is, give her a get. You give her a get, she can marry someone else and then find more support. So you can't plead poverty. You can plead that the standard of living is lower than that amount. That's the legitimate claim. But that you can't pay, no, so to solve the problem, I give you the get. That's exactly what our prenup is based on. That's, I believe that the Nachlas Shiva Simon test, which is the Idurik Tad of the Tanoim, is the same fundamental idea. Okay, so this is the Ksuba. So since we're running out of time, so far we're still in the Chosin's Tish. Okay, what comes next when you finish that? Where do you go? What do you do next? Badek. What's a Badek? What does that mean? What does the word Badek mean, literally?
Cover.
Badek is the cover. So you cover the Chosin covers the Kala. A little veil, in some Hasidic circles, it's a very thick, can't see through it at all. Could be a problem. And they get brachas, etc. Then they go to the chuppah. And what is the first thing that happens under, if someone marches down? That's not part of the halachic process. What exactly happens? What happens under the chuppah? What gives? You ever see? What happens?
It's
Birchas Erisin. Make two brachas. And then what happens? The most important part of all. What happens? There's nine words. Memorize this if you haven't yet married yet. And after he finishes the nine words, he puts the ring on her right index finger. That's the Kiddushin. If you learned Kiddushin last year, you have the whole Masechta about that act. Nasan hu, v'ama hu. He has to be active in both in the giving and in the speaking. If she does things, it's a big problem. If some of these double ring ceremonies are a serious halachic problem, Moshe's not sure they're even valid. Do they think that they need both rings, like they have with the Christians, to exchange rings, and that creates the marriage? That's a misconception. It's a misconception. It's just wrong. And we don't like misconceptions. That could even be a reason why the marriage is not valid at all. So we don't allow double ring ceremonies. When I'm confronted with that, I say, listen, she wants to give you the ring, let her give it to you in the Yichud room. We'll get to that later. Some rabbis, under pressure, will allow them her to give the ring at the very end after it's all over. And that she's not going to say, I've heard some suggest, Hare ata lekuda shli b'tabas, which that's really can undermine the validity of the wedding. Yes?
She's a lefty,
you found
her left
hand? Either way. Okay. Very good. It's a good question. Either way. In any event, that is the Kiddush. But did you know that marriage has two stages? Kiddush, what's the other stage called? Anyone know?
Nisuin.
How do you translate these two terms in English? How do you translate Nisuin?
Marriage.
Marriage. And then how do you translate Kiddush?
Betrothal.
Betrothal doesn't, we don't know what the word means either. It's probably an incorrect translation. The correct translation of both is marriage. Both mean marriage. Except that marriage based on Erisin or Kiddushin, these two are synonymous, means she's an Eishes Ish, v'beis ha'av. She's still living in her father's house halachically. Whereas when she has Nisuin, she's an Eishes Ish, v'beis ha'av, in the house of her husband. In beis ishach nadara, she enters her husband's home. Okay, there are different ways of figuring out what Nisuin is. Tremendous disputes among the Rishonim and the Poskim. What exactly is Nisuin? We know what Kiddushin is. He gives it a ring. That's clear. But what's Nisuin? So, we'll go in order. Some say it means a Bedekin. Some rabbis want to have Eidim by the Bedekin. But wait a minute. But the Bedekin, he hasn't put a ring on her finger yet. How can you put the cart before the horse? There is one opinion which says that Chuppah Kona, that Chuppah can create Kiddushin as well, in which case, maybe the Bedekin, they're already married. They did a chuppah, and the chuppah kona. We generally assume that's not the case. Other include the canopy. That's what we call the chuppah in our jargon. We call it the canopy. Others have a talis, the yekesh meaning some svarim, a talis over the chosn kala, for us to knafech ala masecha. That's considered to be the chuppah. Yet others say that it's when they go into what we call the yichud room, private room. Yet others say it's when they go home to their apartment where the marriage is consummated. That's really the chuppah. The Bach writes, we try to do everything. We try to do all of it. So we have a bedekin, we have a chuppah, we have a yichud, some even have a talis. And so we try to cover all the bases. But it's important to know halacha l'maisa, at what moment are they really married. So for Ashkenazim, In my opinion, the moment of marriage is when they complete the Sheva Brachos. So, under the chuppah, Mesameach Os Nemakala, as soon as that's said, that's the Nisua. Between that, there was a period of X number of minutes, from the time the ring was put on her finger, until they finished the last of the seven Brachos, when she's a Arusa. She's not in the Nisua yet. Yes?
It's not the actual Brachos which create the Chalos.
It's not the Brachos create the Chalos. However, in order for the chuppah to create Nisuin, there needs to be a desire on the part of the members of the couple that it should happen. And presumably, for example, after the ring is put on the finger, what's the very next thing that happens under the chuppah? Remember? They read the ksubah. They have to read the ksubah. A very famous rabbi said that can read a ksubah. It's not necessary to read a ksubah. It was only put in there, in Rashi's time, to make a hefsek, the separation between the kiddush and the nisu. Used to be a year separation. It's a Mishnah Ksubah, so it's to wait a year. Well, we have it in Chumash, Teshav Anayim Itoni Yom HaMoasa, right? A year. Now it's down to a few minutes. So if you need the Ksubah, to separate, you have one coast in the Eris and one coast in the Nisuin. So it's clear from that minute of Rashi that she's not in the Nisuin until after the Ksubah is read, presumably after the Brachas are recited. Why is this relevant? Because there's certain things that can only happen between the Eris and the Nisuin. If a man wants to give up certain rights that are come to him by Jewish law, has to be done at that point between Eris and Nisuin. My father, Zichron Levracha, remarried after my mother passed away, and his wife had two daughters in Bnei Barak, and she wanted to keep her assets separate, which is very understandable in such circumstances. So this is Karelitz, or the cue card. My father said, Dinu Dvarim, Ainu bin Chasayach of a Parasain of a Paris Parasain at all. Comes to the Gemara Ksubas Pegim with the Gemara. That's what he said. When did he say it? After he put the ring on the finger before the Sheva Brachos, right? Well, there were those who claimed, no, it's too late. Because since he put the ring under a chuppah, there's a Nisuin immediately. There's no gap. Seamless. And therefore they claim if you want to do that, you have to get married outside the chuppah. Put the ring not on the chuppah, say that, and then only go under the chuppah. So Rav Nissen Karelitz didn't hold that way. I don't hold that way either. Well, the rabbis are of that opinion. It's an interesting question, not for now. Okay. So after we have the ksubas being read, then we have what happens next? Sheva Brachos. Sheva Brachos. Recited under the chuppah, under the canopy. Okay? Sheva Brachos are recited. And then, again, they drink the wine. If it's appropriate, the proper way to do it, to give all the parents, assuming there's intact homes, that with four parents, that we try to give everyone a piece of the action. The father of the chosn and the mother of the kala give the first sip of wine, the first cup, and the father of the kala and the mother of the chosn give to their new in-law children the second cup of wine. Okay? What happens after that?
Rabbi's speech.
If the rabbi speaks, he should speak between Arison and Nisu. Because he should speak, because he wants to make a bigger hefsek between the Eris and the Nisuin. If the rabbi speaks, I recommend he does it right after the ksubah, right before the Sheva Brachos, which I think is usually done that way, although not everybody does that way. Okay, after the speech, not part of it, but Imeshkachech. Became a very popular sin in Imeshkachech. When I was getting married, no one sang it. They said it, though. Well, they did something, Zeichel Echurban. What do you do, Zeichel Echurban? Anyone know? Break the glass, and what else might you do? Ashes and Mamachim Tchillin. So, Rav Soloveitchik would always put ashes on the challah, he did it by me, after the Nisuah, just before he broke the glass, which makes a lot of sense. That's exactly the same thing. We break the glass, put the ashes. People find it a little bit grotesque. They put it a little before, they don't do it at all, but I think that's a correct. Then, no, okay, good. They break the glass, someone yells out Mazel Tov, some break the glass in the middle to try to fool the people, whatever the case may be. And then what happens after that? Yichud room. They go to the Yichud room, which is supposed to go as quickly as possible because the brachas before they go on the Yichud, go to the Yichud room, and they wait there a number of minutes. The Poskim say what's called Yichud or the Bia. How many minutes it is? It's a big fight. Some say more, some say less. So let's say in my bad time, I'm going to stay there for 8 minutes, give them a chance to breathe, okay? And then they knock on the door and they come out whenever they come out, the door is supposed to be locked. So the photographer starts banging on the door. Speaking of photographers, I always recommend that the pictures be taken early. Even the pictures would have the chos and the kal on the same picture, I think should be early. Even though there are some who claim you can't do it because they have to not even see each other for a week before, that's not found anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a very recent custom. It's a good custom, but the week has to come to an end sometime. So it's either comes to the end of the bedek or it comes to the 2 hours before when they take the pictures. Is that in the tircha de tzibura? All the pictures that involve the chos and kal are postponed till after the chuppah. It could take an hour and a half till they come out, and people are going crazy. Tircha de tzibura. If you don't want to do what I said, take the pictures earlier, crop the picture in. Just leave space and put the best picture of the chos and the kal in all the pictures that you took before. Don't keep people waiting so long. So then they have a suda sasana. And they bench, and after the bench you have shavu brachos, and then the wedding is officially over. It's always recommended that the shavu brachos be held as early as possible, because if you go to weddings today, it could be 500 people at the wedding, and no minyan at the shavu brachos. I mean it literally, because everyone leaves. So the best thing to do, is if they have a first dance, then they serve the main, and then before the second dance, have the shavu brachos. No one leaves before the main. No, most people sit there and they like a piece of whatever they give.
Bench after the main.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Then those who want to leave can leave at a decent hour. Those who want to stay and dance and have dessert can stay and dance and dessert. That seems serious. It makes so much sense to me. But almost no one listens to me. So
I did it.
Good. You did the right thing. That's much better. Almost everyone's there for Shavuot. This is a great thing to do. Otherwise, it could be almost empty. Everyone blesses you. The earlier you finish the bench. And people even stay. I try to stay afterwards. You did such a chesed, you benched early, so I stay for the second dance. Maybe the dessert is what tempts me out, whatever it may be. But, you know, it's a simchas chos of a kala. It's a great thing. It really is a great thing. But it should be done at a decent hour. Okay? So these are some of the halachas of Siddur Kiddushin. I was asked to speak about today. Do you have any questions before we are supposed to end at 12:45? We have some questions before. Yes.
I saw with the double ring. I saw a case where they didn't. There was not Kabbalah's Kenyan on the ksuba till under the chuppah, and there they gave rather than doing
the All right.
Does that work?
Listen to me. There's a certain rabbi who lives not far from me.
Who he was the
Rabbi. So he was trying to find a way how to have a kosher double ring ceremony. He's a very brilliant and creative fellow. So like this, normally we said there's a Kabbalah's Kenyan. So why does Kabbalah's Kenyan usually work? It used to be a handkerchief, now it's usually a pen, a suda. I give a pen to the chosen, and he, by picking up the pen in front of two witnesses who then sign the document, he obligates himself to whatever additional obligations we find in the suda. Fine. But I'm really representing the kala, right? Because the kala acquires everything that goes, nothing comes to me. I'm just a facilitator. So he accepted to give her this, and to give her this, to give her this. So when I give my pen, sometimes the witnesses give their pen, or my pen, it's really on behalf of the kala. I think Gemara explains himself the Kiddushin last year, but then Evan Knaini, I'm not going into that detail how it works. So this rabbi had this brilliant idea. Let the girl give her pen, it's not a pen, we'll start with a pen, to the chasen, under the chuppah, and then he'll obligate himself to what's written in the ksuba. Brilliant. What's wrong with that? Fine. Why use a pen? Use a ring. So she'll give a ring to the chosen, and by doing so, the chosen obligates himself to whatever's in the ksuba. So it's a double ring ceremony, but the second ring is not creating any kind of kiddushin, which this rabbi is smart enough to know can't work. It's just creating the obligation of the ksuba. Listen, when this was thought about many, many years ago, people were so up in arms. They said, this is terrible. They came to me and said, this is apokursus, and we have to run this rabbi out. I said, it's not apokursus. No, it's an interesting, innovative idea, which, you know, won't happen on my watch. I'm not probably the side which is not going to happen. But technically speaking, it's valid. And the truth is, it's a big problem because in the world that some of us inhabit, there's so much push to make the obligation to the ceremony of marriage more egalitarian. Some years back, a group called Jofa put out a June edition of their magazine, and it said 13 ways to enrich your wedding. the collar breaks the glass. That's the picture on the front page. Et cetera, things like this, which I may have no real consequence, but they're just trying to change the dynamic. And I'm not a fan of any of these changes. I'm more of a traditionalist. Yes?
How much of making your wedding more egalitarian and more American would be, I guess, doing like what the Glaive are doing? Like,
you want to hit Chukos Hakam as well as other problems? That may be correct. I'm not going to explain to you why these issues are very problems. They want to put the mother's name in the Ksuba, which is against the tradition. There are many things they want to do. Yeah. Some have more halachic problematica, and some have less. I just want to end with one more thing. What's your question? Yeah?
I've seen some people sign the Ksuba under the chuppah.
Yeah, in Israel, it's signed under the chuppah.
Yeah,
in Eretz Yisrael.
Something that maybe you recommend?
No. More likely to make a mistake if you do under the chuppah. I thought the Ksuba way before, and then we sign it at the table usually.
Why do they do it in Israel? What's the purpose?
In many ways, it makes more sense. For example, the Ksuba says, the man said to the wife, have Elia to be my wife. It's not true. He didn't say it yet. So if you do it after you put the ring on the finger, then it's true.
No problem with Metzike Shikra there.
That's what they're talking about. Some, that word, the Kanina, they won't put it in advance. There's a blank here in every Ksuba. The problem is, you'll forget to put it in afterwards. I've seen it many times. That's a problem. The last thing I want to bring up is a new thing came back, which was dormant for decades, and that is mixed dancing at weddings. For decades, it didn't exist. Decades. In the old 50s and 60s, for decades, all of a sudden it's making a comeback. Even at people who should know better. People went to yeshivas, and it's unbelievable. Of course, the rabbi has to say that it's not allowed. Sometimes it could be an issue of, you know, if you're not going to do this, you can't do the wedding, and you have to do the wedding. So now, in that case, you do what used to happen in the Young Israels when I was growing up in the 50s, 60s. They had a dinner, and the rabbi knew what was going to go on. They had kosher dancing 100%. Then they benched. The rabbi left. And they did what they wanted. The rabbi's out. They're standing over here. That has to happen. Bench with Shevabroch. The rabbi leaves, and then the wedding is over. They want to have whatever they want to do. I'm mentioning it now because I always tell them, you can't do this. This is not allowed, but if it has to happen, and you have no alternative. So the Masada should make sure it's not done until after he is out. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't listen because people just start, you know. You have to be in control of the band. The band tells you what the music is like. At least that helps a little bit. Much more to be said, but I'm 5 minutes late already. Supposed to end, so should all get married properly and build the bottom that money be Yisrael. If you want a mincha, we can do it. We have a minyan. Yeah. Can we make a minyan for mincha?
Yeah.
Yes? Everyone will stay? Good. Let's go. You need a chazan. You can also turn the table for me.
Just use the
bathroom. Sure.